Franklin Covey is a company I have known and followed for almost a decade. I believe we first met Steve Young in 2014. Over the years, I have gotten to know Steve, who recently retired, along with Bob, Paul Walker, Sean Covey, and various other team members. As we consider Franklin Covey as a prospective investment, we're trying to determine if it's a good use of our clients' capital. We're primarily investigating two things, among others that may arise. The first is AI and its impact on the learning and development industry, specifically Franklin Covey. The second is the ongoing Salesforce transition under Holly Proctor. The purpose of a call like this is to gain perspective from someone unbiased who is not currently working for the company but has detailed knowledge of the industry and the company. This can shed more light on these topics, particularly the Salesforce transition. I think you had a lot to say about that topic during the screening question. I like to start with a bit of career background. Could you talk about your career, what brought you to Franklin Covey, why you departed, and then we can go from there.
I joined the industry a long time ago, working for various firms. All these organizations are involved in performance improvement and talent development. Some are very productized, while others are more build-to-suit. Their audiences include HR, talent development, C-level leaders, and business unit leaders who want to develop their teams and talent. I have a long background in this industry.
Could you discuss your time at Franklin Covey, what you were responsible for?
I was referred to Nate Ritchie by some of his team members, people I had met both through networking. We started discussing a client partner role. Just before the offer, he mentioned another role he thought I might be interested in. It was essentially a client partner role, but focused on selling the business outcomes portfolio. They had created a separate unit to sell those products, including the four disciplines of execution and helping clients succeed. I thought, am I selling products for a reputable company that I can believe in? If so, I was willing to try it. I became part of Nate's team, and over time, his team evolved to focus strictly on that business unit. The practice had been running before, but they were trying something new by separating it from the other client partners to see if we could accelerate sales with a hyper-focus on those two product lines. The group eventually grew to about 12 people, but by the time I left, it had dwindled to 3 or 4. Finally, they eliminated that team.
I'm interested in what you mentioned, because the whole premise of the All Access Pass was moving away from selling individual solutions in favor of providing access to all the content. Could you explain why they were building a team specifically for those solutions?
The way I understood it, there were a couple of different factors. By the way, we sold the All Access Pass, so let me explain a bit. First, helping clients succeed was somewhat on hold because it was undergoing a complete rebuild. Personally, I didn't focus much on it. There was some real allegiance in the market to helping clients succeed, but outside of that group, many people hadn't heard of it. I had sold different sales solutions in the past that were frankly more popular. So I delved into the four disciplines of execution. I found it excellent, especially since I had been selling talent development solutions for years. Companies would spend $30,000 to $300,000 on, say, some of the Achieve Global programs. In the second or third year, the CFO would question what they actually gained from that investment. They spent a lot on developing talent. Did they really want to reinvest that money? What was missing was a connection to a business outcome. There was talent development for its own sake, but not for achieving a business outcome. What I saw in the four disciplines was a connection. We helped companies identify a breakthrough result, the big goal they needed to achieve for the year, 6 months, or quarter. We helped senior leaders name that breakthrough and work towards solving it. They would start to see gaps in their leadership skills. Some senior leaders couldn't hold people accountable or have difficult conversations. Some hindered growth due to a lack of trust in their organization. With Franklin Covey and the four disciplines, we could say there was a business outcome directly tied to the skills of their leaders. Then we would bring in client partners who sold the more traditional Franklin Covey content to support developing leadership skills in service of the business outcome they were aiming for.
Could you talk about your perspective on the sales force at that time? You mentioned thoughts on the transition to the new hunter-farmer model compared to where they were before. I'd like to hear your perspective on what worked well in their model, what didn't, why they're moving to this new model, and the pros and cons of it.
Let me address the All Access Pass. When I started in the Business Outcomes unit, they were trying to sell just a pass for the Four Disciplines platform. I was a strong advocate for selling the whole pass to clients for business outcomes. This approach made it easier for them to purchase additional content later. I always sold the full pass, which included the intellectual property for everything, not just the Four Disciplines. That's how they were connected. When I joined Franklin Covey, regardless of the units, there were many deeply tenured people who had never worked elsewhere. I was looking forward to Holly's plans because I believed the sales force needed modernization. The sales process and tools needed updating. Franklin Covey wasn't really set up as a sales organization, even though they catered to the sales force, which was the largest group in the company.
It's ironic, since they also sell sales performance solutions.
The performance solutions focus on what you say during a sales call, the relationship you build, and your approach. They don't cover setting up Salesforce or your CRM, nor do they provide a selling process or a buyer's process. It's ironic, but we definitely needed a facelift in the sales category, particularly in our go-to-market strategy. We were reaching out to people who had never heard of Franklin Covey. We're in a new generation, and many haven't heard of Franklin Covey or the 7 Habits. Changes were necessary. The quota system was somewhat lacking. I remember interviewing for my next job, and people asked how I performed against quota. I would chuckle because every year they just added $300,000. It didn't have much meaning or science behind it. Many people didn't meet it while others overshot it, but there was no science to either situation. People got territories or clients because someone else left. There was a lack of accountability in sales. I was looking forward to Holly's plans for Franklin Covey, hoping for a better understanding of what was working and what wasn't, and why people were successful or not. This way, we could identify the skills needed for development or the marketing required. We didn't have enough data to make informed changes. Holly's changes were interesting. The hunter-farmer model made sense, but we spent months not knowing our roles. When I first met Holly, I boldly asked if she would keep the business outcomes model separate. She said no, eliminating it. I don't know if she realized she was telling me my job was going away or assumed I would take another role. I never went back to ask her. We spent months not knowing if we would be slotted as a hunter or farmer or at what level. There were segments like small business, mid-market, enterprise, and key accounts. We didn't know our roles or who we would report to. Then she mentioned changing the compensation plan. There was a lot of uncertainty about our roles, making it hard to stay focused.
Looking beyond that, let's delve deeper into the Salesforce transition. There are several elements involved. They've brought in many new people who aren't part of Franklin Covey's historical base. Additionally, they've shifted from geographical segmentation to a different approach. There's a hunter-farmer model, and perhaps more standardization in marketing practices and lead generation, moving towards a centralized function rather than each client partner doing it their own way. If you consider these changes and contextualize them with your experience, like during your job interview where you were asked about quotas, how does Franklin Covey's current approach compare to other organizations? Where have you seen these strategies succeed or fail? What elements of this transition do you think are most likely to succeed, and which might face challenges?
I believe that as Franklin Covey evolves, the entire industry is also undergoing transformation. You mentioned AI earlier, and I think it will play a role in this change. In my opinion, if the industry doesn't focus on real business outcomes, we risk losing our way. However, I see that everyone is making this transition. CHROs, chief people officers, and chief talent officers now have a significant role. The focus on people versus processes or products is shifting. That's just my personal view. I hope Franklin Covey eventually gets it right. We were shown an organizational chart and told this was the new approach. We had more positions than people. But on the day we expected to be assigned roles, 40 of us were laid off. It's challenging to see if the plan is working because it seems to be constantly changing. They hired many CSRs and CSMs, but recently there was another layoff, making it difficult to predict the outcome. The direction seems accurate, but the details are crucial. Keeping people focused amid so much change is tough. Bringing in new people isn't inherently bad. Holly brought a team with her, which unsettled many who had been with Franklin Covey for a long time. It wasn't necessarily negative, but it created mistrust about their industry understanding. Many have sold SaaS, and I know Paul wants to position us as a technology company. However, the software might not be the differentiator clients are seeking. It's more of an additional offering. If we're moving towards subscription models like SaaS, I understand the direction. The industry relies heavily on relationships, especially in human resources and talent management. While technology is purchased transactionally, many decisions are relational. This focus might shift towards business outcomes rather than leadership development. I am unsure if the right combination is in place yet. It's a massive change that won't happen overnight. Ironically, the company didn't follow any change management principles, despite teaching them. The abrupt changes were unsettling and not fitting for a brand like Franklin Covey. People were blindsided, including myself, despite performing well. Being cut without understanding the reasoning was unsettling. This hampers growth until they find a clear direction and stop frequent changes. From the outside, it appears they lack a cohesive plan. However, I believe Holly is intelligent, and Paul is dedicated to the company's success. I know they are trying very hard.
I wasn't going to get to that until later, but maybe for the character reference piece. Could you share more about your perspective on Paul, Holly, and perhaps anyone else? I know Steve's left. I knew him pretty well. What about Sean Covey, or anyone else you think is important or notable?
I wasn't very close with everyone, but I observed the impact of their relationships. Sometimes relationships were more valued than results, which can make it challenging to run a company. It's important to focus on results, but I believe there's still a lot of integrity at Franklin Covey, including with Paul. However, there have been some missteps in direction. I don't know Holly well enough to comment extensively, but I observed her executing her plan. She was growing into her role within the culture while trying to aggressively execute her plan, which can be difficult.
Being in Utah, there were many people who were LDS, and I heard that those who weren't could sometimes have a hard time fitting in. Holly isn't LDS, is she?
I don't believe so, but I'm not sure.
Did you get the feeling that they're moving towards being less close-knit? This can be positive or negative, but it seems to be the direction of travel.
I think it's a product of a few things. The company was founded by Stephen Covey, and many principles stem from his faith. Building a company in Salt Lake City, Utah, naturally led to hiring many LDS people. It's a network that you leverage. Clients and family members can be part of that network. It's not necessarily a bad thing. There were rumors that non-LDS individuals wouldn't be selected, but I never felt that way personally. It seemed coincidental that many were LDS due to the company's origins. I'm not LDS, and they had no issues hiring me. I don't feel I was cut because I wasn't LDS. There might be a cultural element within the faith that hesitates to cut someone. When I onboarded Bob Whitman, I saw a video during the COVID onboarding where he said, if someone is asked to leave, it should come through him. He felt responsible for everyone's success and wanted to ensure they were set up for success. I think that's part of the faith culture and was extended to everyone, not just LDS individuals. Some people had concerns about it, but I didn't. Maybe I was naive, but it wasn't an issue for me.
I was just curious. I think very highly of them from an integrity perspective. It's something I've heard a couple of times, so I wanted to get additional perspective on it.
Yes, I've heard it many times too, but it didn't impact me.
Let's move towards AI a little bit. First, you mentioned going to clients. There are clients who know and love 7 Habits and have used it for decades. And then there are those who don't know it. Could you talk about the basis of competition? I know you were primarily selling 4DX and not the entire portfolio. But why would someone choose Franklin Covey? I guess it's conditional upon an organization deciding they need something for learning and development. They have 3 options. Do it internally, go to Franklin Covey, or go to a competitor. What did you typically see as your competition? Was it more about wanting to do it themselves? Budget availability, or competition? When you went to sell and weren't successful, why was that?
Depending on the size or maturity of an organization, Franklin Covey could be more or less needed. Some large enterprises bought one piece of content like 7 Habits and didn't want the all-access pass because they only wanted that. For example, AT&T bought something due to a relationship, they did unconscious bias training. Once that was completed, they didn't need Franklin Covey anymore because they had plenty of content providers and their own team. A smaller or mid-sized organization might need the content and support, such as building learning journeys or leadership plans. Client requirements varied based on size or maturity, and that was reflected in how we sold. I joined when we were already selling the All Access Pass, but I heard it was a big shift for client partners to sell it when someone just wanted 7 habits. It was a different framing for sales. We wanted them to have the impact platform, not just content. The All Access Pass includes the impact platform, hoping that by using it, the company becomes more embedded with Franklin Covey and less likely to leave. You onboard, develop, and retain them. I lost track of your question.
I'm trying to understand their competitive position and the extent to which they compete with other companies versus companies like AT&T that can develop content internally.
Competition encompasses all those aspects. WalletShare was a competition because clients are buying software and other content for different purposes. For instance, they might not need sales, or they purchase sales from someone else, which took some of their budget, so they couldn't buy our product. So there's WalletShare competition, status quo, or internal team competition. We also faced competition from ourselves. You know, there's a book called The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, and another called The 4 Disciplines.
Yes, there are several million copies of Speed of Trust as well.
Especially with The 4 Disciplines, we often encounter people saying, "Hey, I already bought the book. Why should I pay you for anything?" I worry about AI in that context. If someone needs a course on trust, they might just use Capterra or similar platforms to create one. Where is AI sourcing its expertise? Is it drawing from Speed of Trust? How does Franklin Covey protect its intellectual property in the AI era? It's already in a book, so it's out there. How can you prevent people from using it? Franklin Covey had its stance, saying once you operationalize or monetize it, you've crossed the line with the IP. I don't know how they'll handle this with AI, but hopefully they have a plan. AI isn't the be-all and end-all. If I were still at Franklin Covey and a client said they could write their own course on developing trust among leaders, I'd compare it to DIY home building. I could build my house, but it might collapse because I'm not a home builder. That's not my expertise. It's a stretch, but there's value in having a partner to anticipate trends, make recommendations, and connect learning outcomes with content. Otherwise, you risk poor quality content. However, a strong L&D leader paired with AI content development could be effective. Many have years of experience in large organizations and have been through Franklin Covey, learning things they can apply in DIY. It's challenging. I think Franklin Covey will differentiate itself beyond content, likely through technology, as Paul suggested.
Yes, and the corollary to that, which you mentioned in the screening questions, is that for every dollar of All Access Passes sold, there's typically 60 cents of services sold alongside, like facilitation, training, and coaching. This suggests that the value isn't solely in the content. Could you explain the value proposition? It seems like if you're paying for content and training, that's an easy area to cut. Why do clients sign up for that training? Is it truly necessary to deliver the value?
That's the case Franklin Covey tries to make. Throughout my career, convincing someone to buy content and then pay us to facilitate it has always been a challenge. The question often arises, why can't they facilitate it themselves? So we often suggest, let us conduct the first session so that your facilitators can learn how to do it effectively. We'll provide a model for you to emulate and highlight the pitfalls to avoid. Sometimes this approach worked, where we conducted the initial facilitation and then they took over. We also argued that you can't be a prophet in your own land. An external voice, someone who has seen similar situations across various companies and industries, can facilitate with a different kind of authority. Besides facilitation, Franklin Covey offers a lot of augmentation services. I can't recall the exact term they use now, but they had strategists. For mid-sized companies without a talent development team, trying to build a roadmap for a 300-person cohort of mid-level managers, tracking and measuring success, sending reminders and reinforcement, Franklin Covey offered valuable services. These were particularly beneficial for organizations of a certain size or maturity that wanted these services but lacked the manpower to execute them.
Looking at AI, what do you think the opportunities are? Two obvious ones are the ability to customize content, whether through translation or client-specific customization, and AI coaching to increase engagement. Are there other angles I might be missing?
No, I think those are the areas Franklin Covey is focusing on. AI can be used to highly tailor content. You could take the content you purchased and, depending on the contract, modify it. You could integrate it with tools like ChatGPT to combine it with your company values, mission, and audience background. It does a decent job.
The threat of AI is evident, like companies using it to produce content internally. But what about the opportunities? They've introduced an AI coach, and customizing or developing content should become much cheaper. If they want to refresh the 7 Habits, it used to be a multi-year, multi-million-dollar initiative. With AI, they can really speed that up.
I guess my jury is still out on whether or not that's a differentiator for Franklin Covey, because anybody can do it. I don't know that it stands out as anything different, since any other competitor can do the same thing. So now we're back to an apples-to-apples comparison. There's no differentiation there. Everybody's got AI coaches. Everybody can use AI. I think it boils down to whether you're a 7 Habits buyer. Do you really buy into those 7 Habits? If you're a trust buyer, do you really buy into that? Then it's back to the content. Does the content resonate with your organization? However you want to build it or roll it out? Anybody can do that. So then the differentiator is back to the content. In the Helping Clients Succeed portfolio, they talk about the differentiator being in the eye of the beholder. They have an exercise where they show you a set of pictures of owls. Some are professional photography owls. Some are macrame owls. And some are children-drawn owls. They're all owls. Then they ask everyone, which is your favorite owl? And of course, with 20 people in the room, you have 3 or 4 different favorites. For any given client, the content might be the decision maker. The AI use case could be the decision maker. The relationship with Franklin Covey, the platform. Who knows what it is for any given client? The problem is every talent development company is doing the same things. I think it's very hard to stand out on technology.
Right. That's what I was trying to ask. When Franklin Covey, there are other companies out there like Critical Conversations, Carnegie. There are other companies that departments could turn to. Why does Franklin Covey win? How often is it kind of a bake-off between Franklin Covey and some other company? I'm trying to understand their opportunity.
The breadth is definitely a differentiator for Franklin Covey, because some of the ones you just named are sort of one-hit wonders. They have one piece of content and try to spread it out to attach to a lot of different business problems, but they essentially have one piece of content. Franklin Covey does have a massive breadth of content. So if you wanted a one-stop shop, that would be the differentiator, if that's what you want. Franklin Covey would have that. Some talent development buyers purchase a lot of stuff. Some of them buy crucial Franklin Covey content. They buy 3 or 4 different content pieces to address the problem they have or perceive they have. But I mean, breadth could be a differentiator, yes.
One thing to dig into a little more, and I don't know how much exposure you had to it, is the whole value proposition of the All Access Pass. To some degree, it's about consolidating vendors. Instead of paying for Crucial Conversations and Franklin Covey separately, one All Access Pass subscription saves you money, because you don't have to buy all of those. In the real world, how compelling is that from your perspective?
There were companies of a certain size and maturity that appreciated having everything in one place, saying it was the best thing ever. However, companies like AT&T were indifferent. They didn't need it and didn't want to be locked into it. The ability to sell a 3-year pass was phenomenal, because many companies preferred to commit 1 year at a time. They were uncertain if they would need all the features in 3 years, especially if they had just started using them. Some companies were grateful, while others were only paying for a specific population.
What else should I know about Franklin Covey? I like to leave time for unstructured exploration. From your experience working there, if you were in my position, what would you want to learn or verify about the company? How do you view the development of Franklin Covey and the L&D industry more broadly?
I don't have insight into all their strategies and data, but you've touched on it. They need to identify their differentiator or risk being just another player. Programs like the prison and education programs are inspiring, but I'm not sure they're highlighted enough in the broader marketplace. Internally, there's a divide. Some have full faith in Franklin Covey and continue working diligently, while others are uncertain and considering leaving. This internal distraction could impact their numbers, though I don't have the data to confirm. The sentiment I hear is unsettled, especially with layoffs occurring after assurances there wouldn't be any more. This uncertainty affects employee investment and morale, especially with salary cuts and changes in compensation plans that make it harder to do their jobs effectively. The tools planned for the future could inspire the sales force if implemented quickly. The new CMO is a positive change, as it was needed to help define their differentiator, market messaging, and ideal client profile, which weren't always clear.
As a final point of discussion, as there's more economic uncertainty and we head into a recession, the perception is that the learning and development industry is often the first area to face cuts. What do you think about the outlook? When considering a weaker economy, how do you think it affects the solutions they sell?
Well, history would suggest it definitely impacts the industry. If you're not driving revenue and the company is really crunched, they will do what they have to do to keep the lights on. However, I believe there's a shift happening. We started referring to people as capital, but I don't think you get the best out of your people when they're seen as human capital. I think that perspective is changing. Some days I feel it is, some days I don't. But I believe people's behaviors and their ability to lead and influence are more evidently tied to business results than before. Leaders, CHROs, and others are taking a bigger role, not just in the adoption of AI, but in enabling AI in larger organizations. Some companies have entire layers of their workforce as AI agents or digital employees, and they're ahead of the game. Meanwhile, others are still trying to figure out what AI is. So it varies widely. I think it may be the same as always, where the economy cuts off talent development at the knees, so to speak, except in more progressive organizations. That's what I would suggest to Franklin Covey. In my own company, there will be companies that cut this. We need to find the ones who value it. There are plenty of companies that value developing leaders and see it as a crucial part of their strategy. Let's focus on finding them rather than lamenting those that cut us off. It's all we can do.
It's such a large industry. One interesting point about the learning and development industry is its size. Even Franklin Covey, being a large company in that industry, is relatively small. Why do you think it's so fragmented compared to other professional services industries?
Why is it so fragmented? Perhaps because it started as one topic. Companies like Achieve Global were the result of merging three different companies, including Learning International. I can't recall all three, but one focused on professional selling skills and another on leadership principles. They initially focused on one topic, merged, and then split again. Much of that content went to Korn Ferry. Now, Korn Ferry is enormous and has diversified its services and content significantly. They might have the key, though I'm not sure how well they're doing. Then you have companies like Crucial and Inside Out Development that still focus on one piece of content, which keeps the industry somewhat fragmented. Additionally, companies are constantly acquiring each other. I'm not sure which direction it will go, but this fragmentation likely hinders the industry's overall growth. I hadn't considered it that way before, but it might be a factor. Who would you say are the largest players in the learning and development industry?
Franklin Covey is among them, right?
Yes, and then there are all these startups that are entirely online. Everything is asynchronous with quick access. You can subscribe and create your own individual development plan, following this journey completely asynchronously because your company bought the license for you. There's a lot of that out there too, and it's quite appealing. I'm not sure how effective it is, but it probably breaks up the market share.